TFM.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, some rumors flying around that you are the Dabo King.
Dang it, Chris. Now Quark's not going to let me back into Quark's. Any of the Quarks.
Which Quarks?
That's right. What I'm saying. I don't want to be banned from the franchise. Where else am I going to get the best two grubs this side of the wormhole?
I don't know, but you can get 10% off of them, and you can also get your photo taken with Quark.
What good are these Quark bucks if I can't go to Quarks?
Yes, today we are going to visit DS9 again, but not in the usual way. In a little bit of a more fun way, as we talk about the Lower Decks episode, Hear All, Trust Nothing, a title which comes from Call to Arms, the 190th rule of acquisition. Matthew, how did you feel, particularly that moment, coming out of warp, getting set to circle the pylons?
Well, Chris, you know, I just absolutely loved the fact that we got to circle the pylons and gaze at them like we were really in awe, you know, twice. And it made me feel like we were back at home. You know, part of it was actually even just, you know, obviously this is an animated show, but DS9 just looked beautiful in the CGI animation that they use for it. And I was just thinking to myself, oh my gosh, I can only imagine now what an upgraded HD version of the model would look like if, you know, we ever finally get that, because the station really does. It looks gorgeous here, and it felt good to be back, and it really felt good. You know, they've obviously, and Lower Decks, you know, we've already had other Deep Space Nine references where, you know, they had the whole Martok D&D game that they're playing.
That was awesome. And,
which was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the writers here are in love with all of Star Trek, and so they do a great job of paying homage to it. But to actually just be back at Deep Space Nine and actually get some of the character voices back as well was really phenomenal. And so, yeah, I loved it when we dropped out of warp and we were actually there. So how did you feel when we got that moment?
Well, that moment, that specific moment approaching the station felt like we were back in the live action show that we love. I think the attention to detail and the clarity on the station, and in that type of scene where it's the station against the backdrop of space and then the wormhole coming, works really well in animation to not feel like a cartoon, but to feel like, you said, almost like an upgraded, getting that HD we want for so long. And then, of course, we're clearly in the animation when we're there on the bridge of the Cerritos, but I don't know. It sent like a little chill through me there when the music played and then the wormhole opened.
Mm-hmm. You know, the other really nice thing about this, and this is the beauty of animation too, is even just being inside Deep Space Nine and getting to walk around parts of the promenade, which, you know, they only had so much of the promenade built, and they would kind of rework it a little bit, but there was only so much you could do in that because there was only so many ways you could redress things to make you feel like you were on the circular station. But, mm-hmm. you know, here, because it's animation, you really do feel like you're inside the promenade in a way that you've never been before, which is actually a really fun thing, I think, for any Deep Space Nine fan to be able to get a sense of, okay, you know, you may have looked at the tech manual and seen pictures and everything, but now actually getting an actual visualization of what it's like to be on the fully circular promenade was a great detail. Like, again, this is truly a love letter to fans of Deep Space Nine, which is, you know, I always think of, in many ways, Lower Decks kind of being a love letter most weeks mm-hmm. to fans of Star yeah. Trek by we lovingly nudge ourselves, you know, at the things we can make fun of, but at the same time, we're also lovingly portraying the thing that we do still love. And this was just absolutely that for the even just the station itself of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. You can immerse the viewer in the station experience through this, and it's absolutely a love letter. I mean, the attention to detail, that's been a hallmark of Lower Decks from the beginning, no matter what aspect of Star Trek, which corner of the Star Trek universe they're showing us in a given episode. But DS9, unfortunately, because we don't have it in HD, we haven't been able to fully appreciate the attention to detail and the creative work that went into the television series in the 90s. But it's the richest, certainly of the shows, of the five live action shows that led up to the long break that we had. It's the richest in detail of the sets, of the costumes, of pretty much every aspect. And that really came through in this episode of Lower Decks. And you can tell that it wasn't a case of, well, you know, there's that DS9 show, we should try to incorporate that into Lower Decks a little bit if we can, which is maybe kind of how I was feeling for a while until we finally started getting mentions of DS9 and little glimpses of DS9, because of the first part of Lower Decks, we weren't getting right. as much DS9 stuff yet. But at this point, it's clear that everyone involved really loves DS9 and wanted to bring that detail to life. And mm-hmm. it's just, I think also the inclusion of Nana Visitor and Armin Shimmerman in here to yep. voice Kira and Quark gives me hope that there's a possibility of more DS9 coming to the franchise in some mm-hmm. form. I'm not one of those people, and I think you agree with me, I'm not one of those people who wants to see DS9 come back in full and have another right. season and continue right. the story on television, because too much has been done in the novels, which for us is part of our headcanon. And also, the actors, it would be hard to pick up where things left off. But if there's a way to bring even a short run, you know, a miniseries that fills in some of what has happened in an appropriate time period, I think kind of the way Picard has done, where they're picking up as if time has moved forward at a normal pace for us. Mm-hmm. That's something that I think could be interesting. And if people like Nana and Armin and J.G. Hertzler doing the Bartok board game and stuff, you know, he got involved. So if those people wanted to come back and do something, I think it could be interesting. And this episode kind of hinted yeah. at the fact that the creators themselves may have an interest in something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great thought. And again, having Armin and Nana back was fantastic, and, you know, doesn't really feel like they've skipped a beat. And, you know, I think the only thing about the episode that maybe wish is that, you know, we would have run into Dr. Bashir, or we would have run into Ezri, or, you know, that we would have run into Serac Lofton as Jake. You know, we even mentioned Jake in the episode a little bit, but we don't actually get to see him. So
I could see Serac walking up when Rutherford says, I wanted to have a heart to heart with the junior reporter up here. If Serac had come in and said, I'm not junior anymore, or something like that.
Yeah, that would have been fantastic.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think I think it shows just how much love there is still for Deep Space Nine, and just in general of what people feel about the show. And yeah, I mean, having them back and doing the voice work was phenomenal. And I think there really are many ways in which you could bring these characters back. And I think, you know, it is one of those things, and I was talking to Casey about this when we were talking about Una's latest book for Picard, and there are some Deep Space Nine connections in there. And it feels like in many ways, you know, after Picard is done, I don't know what they're going to necessarily do with that time period, because, you know, you are in a place where everybody is getting older who is in these series. And because of that, it makes you wonder, okay, so what are we going to do? Are they going to basically go back to books, or are we going to really enjoy, are we going to write stories for these other characters again, you know? And again, you've got people like Alexander Siddig and others who are absolutely in a place in their lives, I think, age-wise, where you could still make this possible. So, you know, I would love to see more of this. It's just so great. And so,
Did you see the tweet a few days ago from Marina Sirtis, where she said that we legacy actors, as they call us now, because old codgers is too rude, would love to continue, but only your voices can make that happen. I don't know if that was an implication that there is something on the drawing board that could move forward if there's enough support for it, or if it was simply her saying that she would be interested in continuing to play Troy. But it made me think that maybe there is something beyond the end of Picard as a series that might include some of these actors.
You know, I mean, obviously, they talked about them being in another movie, you know, at one of the recent conventions. I think it was New York Comic Con. I think that's obviously a possibility for them to do. I think, you know, you do something like that, and that's a place where you could absolutely get characters from other shows from the 24th century together, the way they've done with Picard. It actually kind of makes me wonder if you see any of that in Picard at all in season 3, if we might get any other little cameos from other characters. So the thing about it is that you have to do this before you can't. And there is definitely a expiration date on all of these people being able to actually do this. And so you've got to do it sooner rather than later, because, you know, and Marina's right. They're all getting older. We all know it. We see it. You know, it's just a part of life. And so, absolutely, I think this does bring to light the fact that, you know, you've got these characters for Deep Space Nine that you can do something with. And again, Nana and Armin were so great to have back. And the voice work here was spot on, you know. And I did love even that you could kind of hear, you know, Kira feels a little bit older in her voice, but that fits because we're past the end of Deep Space Nine. So that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, that can actually be the case. They just need to do it.
They do need to do it before too much more time passes. And the format of streaming these days does allow them to do short run things that they could not have done in the past. So there is that possibility. But I want them to do it well. I don't want them to just mine 100%. The IP just to churn out content, which is happening to some franchises. And I hope they don't go that route. Talking about the voices, though, Kira sounds a bit older, but there was also something else about her that was a little bit different to me. And they did an interview with Entertainment Weekly magazine, McMahon and Nana Armin, and they all talked about making this episode. And it was interesting what Nana Visitor said about it. She said that Kira hasn't changed. She's just in a different environment. And she said that she always thought Deep Space Nine should be an opera and that someone has to write an opera. And her point, she said, was that if I was doing it on stage as an opera, the tonality of my performance would change. And that's really the only thing that changed, not where she comes from, not her energy, not her intentions, but just the tone of where the piece sits, because animation sits in a brighter tone than television does.
Right.
And I think what she said there summed up exactly the nuance that I was feeling when I was watching it, is that there was just a bit more brightness to her presentation of Kira than what we're used to in the show, but not in a cartoonish way.
Right.
But just the difference between this being a comedy and Deep Space Nine being a very heavy story.
Yeah, and I think you can even hear that specifically in the story she has with Shax, you know, like their argument back and forth, which it is hilarious, actually, this idea that they've known each other for so long and they're always trying to not be the one who owes the other something,
right?
Which is phenomenal. And fits both characters, actually, right? And so to be able to find that little nuance that you can do in animation that plays so well and that fits both of the characters that you've created was phenomenal. And so
I loved it when Shax yells, "Nerys!"
Yes. In the middle of their meeting, right? You know, they're in the background arguing as if nobody can hear them, which is fun.
That's right. Really, which funny planet? The one with the small trees.
Yes. So that whole thing was phenomenal. But, you know, one of the things that I actually, as I was rewatching this, getting ready for us to talk about it, I was actually struck by how the story with Tendi and the other Orion Mesk really hit on the idea that DS9 was really the first Star Trek show to point out, which is that we're not dealing with monocultures.
Yeah,
so
right.
The fact that Tendi has this relationship with the Orions, but she doesn't want to be known for what we stereotypically know Orions for, right? She doesn't have the pheromones.
And she's actually from there.
Exactly.
Unlike Mesk, who's from Cincinnati, right?
Exactly. And so, you know, I think that's the thing that makes this so great, is that they play that off, right? And then, of course, Mesk is from Cincinnati, so, which is just hysterical. And that the only, I love his, like, the only thing I know from Orion's comes from the Holo videos and the ones with the boobs on the front. And I was like,
the bad ones, that's, the ones with the boobs on
the cover. So funny, because, like, it reminds me of all those days when you were like a kid and you were walking through a Blockbuster video, you know, and there was that section that as a kid you weren't supposed to walk through because it had all those covers. And it's like, I just, the little things that they do. But to me, that is a Deep Space Nine story, which is to treat these characters who are from a race that we know not as a monoculture. And so the fact that we got an opportunity to learn something about a character like Mesk, but we really actually finally cracked open Tendi's character and got a chance to learn about who she is and that her family were pirates. She knows how to pirate. She knows how to kick some serious ass. You know, like, she is this great character. She's always been my favorite character on the show anyway. But to do that in such a Deep Space Nine way really helped this episode feel like one of those lighthearted, more Ferengi-driven Star Trek Deep Space Nine episodes.
Yeah. And in a sense, Mesk's story is one that DS9 explored already through Worf and TNG before that a bit.
Yep.
The idea that Worf was adopted, grew up in Minsk. What he knew about Klingons came not from Holo novels with the boobs on the cover, but from books and stories and things that had been shared with him about Klingon culture. but not from growing up in that culture and having experienced it all firsthand through childhood and growing up. And so when this came up about Mesk here, I felt like that was, in a way, a nod to Worf in DS9, but through another character.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And, you know, you bringing up the idea of the way he connects with Worf. I mean, he even has a religious exemption to carry the Orion tool with him, right? The same way that Worf wears the baldric across
his uniform.
Which is
not a religious thing for Worf, but...
No, but I mean...
It's a cultural exemption, I guess I would say.
Exactly. But very similar, right? I mean, that's the kind of the idea. And so I just, all of that is so smart in the way that it actually fits with what Deep Space Nine did and why it worked the way they put this episode together and the story that they were telling for the characters in Lower Decks that mimicked what we would see in a Deep Space Nine episode.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So talking about Quark's story for a moment, and just starting with the voicing again, just for a second, this also was mentioned by Armin in the Entertainment Weekly interview that he actually used the prosthetic teeth that he used on the TV series he insisted on using those to voice Quark in this episode because he felt like they were important to capturing the voice just the way that it should be. And McMahon said that that had him crying laughing that Quark wanted to have those particular teeth in. But I think, again, you know, that's attention to detail. And it's exactly what I would expect from Armin Shimerman. Mm-hmm. When you think about what we learned in the documentary about how the Ferengi characters got together and that he and Kitty in particular really led those meetings where the Ferengi would get together and rehearse, you know, outside of the usual process. And so that devotion to the Ferengi and to Quark as a character is exactly what I would expect.
You know, I've got to call out too, I think it's really great that they used the Karma, which is a part, obviously, of Deep Space Nine lore. You know, they were there to help us, you know, track down parts of the Dominion because they
were... Quark was involved in negotiations with them.
All of that. And so, you know, fitting all that together, that's one of the places where you can see here, right? The writers know their Deep Space Nine and they created a story which felt very realistic to Deep Space Nine as a series. And to do this, you want to do this well. So I really appreciate it that they really pulled out all those stops in the storytelling to make sure it felt consistent with the show that we all knew and loved.
Yeah. And another reason for using the Karma, McMahon said in that interview, in the EW interview, he said, plus they're so big, they're so tall and noticeable and arch, but very like stick up their butt. It felt like utilizing them in a new way that reflected back on the same types of behaviors they had before would fit into the priority I had. And yeah, for that reason too, the way he describes them is how they come across, particularly in animated form, but I think probably that's true of the way they were portrayed in live action back in the day. And it also allows them to flip that switch where the promise of gifts suddenly changes everything. And that also creates that connection there with Quark. And I also love the fact that it turns out that because so much of that Ferengi story involving the Gamma Quadrant in the TV series in Deep Space Nine was connected with the potential of profit in the Gamma Quadrant, which never, you know, fully materialized. There's the whole thing about the Tulaberry wine, which they wanted to buy from the Dosai, but the Dosai couldn't do it, which led them to the Karma. And then they end up buying it from the Karma. And by the way, you and I talk about this in some episodes of The Orb that we've already recorded, but we haven't released yet. So you'll hear us talk about that storyline soon in reverse order here. But the fact that all that stuff was going on, negotiations were going on, court was involved. And then it turns out that there was more profit to be had from the Gamma Quadrant, but it took the form of Quark using Karma technology to build his grand franchise of 21 Quarks. And also, if you don't have space, there's also the Quark Express, which you can set up. But he was able to achieve this by stealing technology from the Karma. So it was a great connection to like adding texture and extending that story that we had watched all those years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I just love the idea that you know, he franchised Quarks, you know, the idea that Deep Space Nine had become this really important place, especially during the Dominion War. So Quarks had become a place people wanted to visit in other places, you know, the idea of, it makes me think that Cisco's should be a franchise now. You know, they've visited Cisco's before on the show. So, but
there should be a Cisco's Creole Express on the station.
Yes, there absolutely should, actually. But this all felt right, you know? Like, you know, Quark was always frustrated because he didn't own a moon or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But the idea that he would find the way for him to make his mark, which is to franchise his own bar and grill across the quadrant, was really smart.
Definitely. I love that part of the story. And to see then at the end, 76% of all of his franchise profits are going to have to go to the Karma now.
Yeah.
To keep him out of prison. And when Freeman asks him, but aren't you, you're happier being poor than being in prison, aren't you? And he goes, no.
Yeah. But I mean, even that, I mean, if you got what, 20 something franchise locations across the quadrant, you know, you got to be raking in the latinum. So even that amount of money, he's still going to be making money. You know,
well, so yeah, compared to having just the one bar on Deep Space Nine, of course, he's much wealthier than he ever mm-hmm. was back in the days of the TV series.
Yeah. So I just think, you know, I would love actually to see more of these type of things on Lower Decks, and I would definitely love them to continue to shower Deep Space Nine with the love that they have already, and you know that this episode absolutely does, because you know this was just a special experience as a Deep Space Nine fan, and you know it may be as close as we ever get to getting more quote unquote live action Deep Space Nine with these characters, mm-hmm. which. You know, I find to be a little bit sad. I think of, you know, all of the opportunities where you could have used Deep Space Nine characters, say, even in Picard, seasons 1, 2, or 3, and they didn't. Mm-hmm. And so I would really like to see that take place somewhere. And you mentioned, and I think I couldn't agree more, Deep Space Nine is the show that is the richest and deepest of all of the shows that I think we've gotten, even throughout the new series. And the fact that it doesn't seem to get as much attention is disappointing. And so, yeah, I do hope that there's something in the cards for what's to come.
Yeah, I hope so. We'll see what form it takes. And Maybe in some of the upcoming streaming content, they might mix characters a little bit more. I am interested to see what happens to Seven and Raffi, for example, when Picard ends, because there's a lot of potential mm-hmm. there for a spinoff yeah. of that, which could then incorporate more characters, including yeah, some from Deep Space Nine.
I mean, you know, you just got a doctor out there who's just on a station, you know, maybe make him and Ezri your doctor counselor combo on the Titan A.
Yeah, absolutely. You could do that. Well, we'll see where it goes. But anyway, it was great. I'm glad we got a chance to maybe break with our usual formula as well here on the Orb of delving into the serious themes of Deep Space Nine and just have fun and laugh a little bit, which we don't get to do too much on this show unless we're talking about Move Along Home or Profit and Lease.
How did I know you were going to say Profit and Lease? Oh my gosh.
Because you've been podcasting with me for like 10 years now.
That's how you knew.
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on Hear All, Trust Nothing. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. If you're already a member, you know what to do. But if not, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it should come right up. If not, just type the whole name. It is a closed group just for listeners. So if you're joining for the first time, please answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post for this episode of The Orb there on the timeline, and you can share your comments with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. And we would love for you to come there and start up a further discussion about what we have talked about today. And if you'd like to send us email, you can also do that. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form that you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose The Orb, and that'll come to Matthew and me by email. And of course, you can find us in social media, Instagram, Twitter, everywhere. Our username is TrekFM. And also, if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Help other listeners find out more about the show. Now, Matthew, when you're not dancing the Kobayashi Maroon, where can people find you?
Oh my gosh. Oh, yeah, that was a whole part of the story we didn't talk about, but was also very funny. When I'm not attempting the Kobayashi Maroon, you can
find... Well, there's no right way to dance.
Right. Can I just stun somebody? Anyway, my name... You could find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, that's Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero. We'd love to catch up with you in any of those places, so follow me and talk to me there. You can also find me here on the network doing a bunch of different shows. We've got the 602 Club, which when we're not talking about Star Trek here on the network, we're talking about all those other fandoms we love. So we've got a whole side of the network you can join there. We're on Twitter at the 602 Club. You can find the bonus shows in there as well. Assembling Avengers and Snyder Cuts. Chris, when we're not doing The Orb together, we talk about Star Trek Enterprise with Warp 5. And of course, we've got Star Trek Picard with The Artificial Tango. We've got Strange New Worlds with Saddle Up. And then I've got Literary Treks doing with that with Casey, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. Also, you can find me on the Nerd Party Network with two shows. One is called Owlpost. That's a completed show with Drea Kaufman, and we did every single chapter of the Harry Potter book series one chapter at a time. And then the great John Mills and I talk about Star Wars each and every week over on Aggressive Negotiations. But Chris, when you're not trying to figure out what you're going to spend your quark bucks on, where can people find you?
It's a hard choice to make because there's so many things in the franchises, and I have a feeling maybe even different locations have, you know, like little local specialties. I'm going to check those out. But when I'm not doing that, you can find me here on the network doing all the shows together with you, which you mentioned. Also, Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room from time to time. And when I'm not podcasting, you can catch me on Twitter. That's the main place where I hang out. My username there is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. That is my username throughout social media, but Twitter is where I am most active. And if you would like to help us keep this show and all the shows that we mentioned, the whole network going, we could definitely use your help. We'd like to send a big thank you to everyone who's helping us right now. And if you would like to get involved, just visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to find out how. Huge thank you to everybody who's supporting us. We really wouldn't be here without you, and we really appreciate all of your help. Well, Matthew, I am looking forward to the next orb that we open, and I'm just wondering what that might be.
Well, Chris, I can't wait to do that with you, and we did want to thank everybody for joining us, and we will see them next time as we gaze into the orb.